The Agora podcast is covered by a BIPCOT no-gov license. Use and reuse is free and encouraged by anyone except governments or their agents. Find out more at BIPCOT.org.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, by all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop.
You were born free, you got fucked out of half of it, and you wave a flag celebrating.
Central authority has just embedded right in it its own problem, and that is that it means a few people make decisions for many people.
All right, well, welcome back to the Agora podcast. It's Penguin here always with Sec Magora, and we have I think a tradition since we've started the show. I believe every year since we started the show, which has been like 3 or 4 years, a end of the year recap or roundup or panel discussion with some folks that you would certainly be familiar with if you're a regular listener of our show. Sec, how are you doing today? Uh-oh. There goes one of our guests.
Right? Tired and old and wet.
What did you say?
Wet? Tired, old, and wet.
I just came in from the rain too. Yes, I am. Yeah, basically a little bit less old, but that's about it.
I made the mistake of planning a vacation for next week for the holiday. We're going away for like 2 weeks. So that just means like my life is harder before and after my vacation. So I got a bunch of shit I'm trying to round up, and animals and end of the year homestead stuff. And I don't know, just trying to get things wrapped up before I leave next week. And then when I get back, it's just fucking going to be grind time. So I've been going like 7 days a week for like fucking 4 weeks at least.
That's crazy. I haven't been working at all. I have
really
been chilling. I've been working. I've been like chilling every weekend other than next weekend, just to get everything in by the 25th. I've been absolutely relaxing and just kind of not panicking and just coasting off of our existing business. And I'm very happy to be able to do that in December definitely working fewer days and trying to keep my expenses down and everything, because I think it's going to, I think business is going to rebound really nicely in the late February, early March.
Normally I slow down this time of the year, and I was kind of expecting that. And I had like the usual random work, you know, a little trimming, a little of this or that, leaf cleanups and stuff. But then I put in a bunch of proposals with this one customer, expecting to have them do like some of it. And they just said yes to all of it. And then they're like, yes, we also want all this other work too. So I have like a solid month for like two people just off of this one customer. So nice. I'm fucking nice. Wide open. I'm wide open full time every single day. It doesn't rain till like March, and then I just start all over again.
Yeah. Well, I pretty much set myself up to be busy with everybody. Yeah. I set myself up to be really busy up until Christmas, and then take that week off, and then two months of just trying to make it. But I got some work, doing some work for a family member, project, give me some good hands-on training. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. How's everybody else doing? I guess we want to go around in the circle. BJ, how are you?
I'm miraculously doing actually pretty excellent, all things considered.
How's your hand?
Yeah, you've been doing a lot.
Yeah, well, my hand is a little bit better than it was 2 days ago, but it's almost back to normal, dare I say. It's hard to judge because I'm not doing anything to it except keeping it in a splint and taking it really easy because it needs to heal for a couple more weeks before they take it off of me permanently, or we'll see what the doctor says. But basically, for anybody who didn't know, I fractured my thumb. So I'm okay. It's been kind of weird, kind of holding off on making jerky. So that's just my side gig. It's not my full-time job. My full-time job is pretty good. And crazily enough, even though I'm in Minnesota, we're having just rain here too. The snow is all melted and it is not a white Christmas yet. So it's kind of disappointing. I'm a Nordic. I'm used to cold weather. I love it. And it's just kind of like muddy and dreary and that's it. We're not having really Christmas right now. So hopefully maybe we'll have some snow soon, but I don't know. Business-wise, work is okay. Work is work, but kind of ornery because I got one of my business partners. He likes to pay my rent by check for tax purposes. And so I let him do that, but he's not giving me enough billable hours for the next 2 months and it's starting to drive me insane. So I got that to deal with. But other than that, everything's good. This will be technically our second Christmas that we've had without my mom, because last Christmas we put it off thinking, well, we'll just get together when she gets out of the hospital, but that didn't happen. And so my family is kind of weird. And you know, when it comes to my mom, she kind of held us together. She was like the glue. This is the reason we all got together all the time. And this Christmas, it looks like it won't be a bust because we're all going to get together at my sister's boyfriend's in Wisconsin. So hopefully we have some fun, maybe start some new traditions. It's not going to be the same, but it's still better than just everybody flaking out, which is what people would like to do if my mom wasn't involved, if that makes sense. Other than that, doing pretty good. Back from my month-long trek all over the continent of Europe, which was just something that I did to shake up, get some adventure in my life, immerse myself into, I guess, parts of my heritage, I guess you could say. And now that I'm back, I'm really happy about it. So
took me a lot of money
and a lot of traveling to basically learn that America is the best country ever. So, I mean, even on a shit day, we're still the best.
Just in case this is like somebody's first time ever listening to our show, who are you and what do you do?
Oh, sure. I'm BJ. I live in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm a native of St. Paul, Minnesota, and I am in web/IT. My business partner and I run a web hosting company. I'm also a dev/ front-end, back-end designer for websites. All our customers are small businesses. I'm trying to reach out in more anarchist businesses. I'm happy to show people how to accept Bitcoin online instead of credit cards for their e-commerce websites and things like that. And then on the side, I basically do a lot of home canning and preserving, and I make jerky and people buy it from me. And that's, I guess, me in a nutshell. And I'm 50 years old and I've worked for myself for going on 20 years. So.
Well, awesome. Let's go around and do like introductions just in case anybody doesn't know who these people are, but you should if you're a listener to this show.
Right.
Rayo, I know you got a hard stop. Does anybody else have like a time restraint? Speak now or forever hold your peace?
Oh, man, I'm good.
Okay. Let's start with Rayo then. Rayo, why don't you introduce yourself? A friend of the show, if mm-hmm. for some reason this is somebody's first time listening to us.
Yeah. So I definitely have at least an hour. At least another hour. But I appreciate the invitation on. Good to be with all you guys. My name is Shane Rayo too. I run the Vani podcast. I guess coordinate the Free Republic of Pasnia, a parallel network, based off the principles of voluntarism, basically just, replacing, that society of coercion with, basically, all those same human necessities, doing it upon a foundation of freedom and voluntarism. So, otherwise, I've got 22 acre homestead here, which I call Veritas Pasnia. And, we raise a lot of animals. Do a lot of stuff here. And, for the moment, been transitioning away from, or I guess it's winter time. So, homesteading stuff has slowed down, and, we just got back into, publishing. I guess the other thing I do is Liberty Intact Publications, which we publish, freedom focused books, like anarchist fiction, liberty fiction, strategy guides, Vanu zines from the 1960s and 70s. We republish those, in book format. And then we also offer privacy tools like ghost phones, de-googled Calyx OS ghost phones, and also Graphene OS ghost phones, and then ghost pads. So basically the same thing, just, freedom and privacy enhanced laptops and phones.
Wow, I did not know that.
We just yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we just added. I mean, it's Elliot publication, so it was basically just books. But now, Aura's got her apothecary stuff on there, so you can get apothecary items. I just added Pasnia Farms category for canned goods right now. There's all sorts of stuff on there. But at the end of the day, I guess that's what we do primarily is publish books and help authors through the publishing process. And that's been pretty much what I've been doing the past week or two is getting a bunch of book projects that have kind of been kind of been pushed off a little bit because as anyone with a homestead knows, you kind of got to focus on that in the summer. Lots of projects wrapped up, and then we got a big one coming up for which I don't know if we talked about it yet publicly, but I got one working on there, and there's a lot of other really cool projects in the works. A really good anthology of liberty fiction, that I'm really excited to get out. So lots going on this end.
Cool.
Awesome, Gonzo. Man, I dig your profile pic. Where's that from?
Yeah, Cam Harless made that for me.
Really?
Yeah.
That looks cool as shit. I just picked up a tarot deck from John Vibes, and it looks a lot of the tarot cards are exactly like that same style. It's very fucking trippy.
He made that for me, and I told him like now I have to go buy a van because that absolutely needs to be airbrushed on the side of a vintage van.
Riding a unicorn with a fucking farting rainbow.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
And purple. Yeah, purple colored van. Yeah.
That'd be amazing.
Well, Gonzo, who are you?
Well, I am a esteemed Pope of the Chaluminati, for one. I'm basically your friendly local degenerate ex-podcaster, sometimes homesteader, currently remodeling a giant concrete sculpture bunker house that we recently moved into in northeast Ohio.
That place is really cool looking. It looks fucking very Hobbit.
Oh, it's insane, man. Yeah, all the memes about, you talk a lot of shit for somebody that lives in a flammable house, like, no, I don't.
Not anymore.
Yeah, it's really cool. A lot of work to do. It was built in 1970, so not a lot of updates since then, but it's solid. I mean, 6-inch thick concrete walls and 36 square hundred feet of projects. So looking forward to doing that.
What was it before? Like, was it just some hippie weirdos owned it before? Like, what was it, just a house?
There was a family that commissioned a sculptor. Wayne Trapp was his name. They commissioned him in 1970 to build a house for them and their 8 children. So over half the house is a children's wing of bedrooms that are connected by tunnels. And there's like a playroom with a ball pit and tunnels that go up to the roof. And you can look out of like portals up there. It's not a sniper's nest as much as it seems to be one. Yeah, so basically it's like a live-in sculpture. It was built from the ground up to make children happy.
It looks really fucking cool. I'll be happy to come.
I did see that on my feed, and I'm like, what is going on here? What is he living in? But now I know it is something very unusual and strange. I was like, okay, that's exactly what it is.
It looks.
I'm curious now. I'm not seeing this.
Are you on Twitter, Gonzo, or is this something on your Discord, or what is this?
No, I'm on Twitter. The house itself has an account. It's going to be kind of a little bit separate from Gonzo because, well, I don't want the house to have to suffer from my bad takes and shit posting, but. Yeah, I post about it a little bit. Yeah, it's neat because it predates the whole like Earthship movement. Earthships came a little bit later, but it incorporates a lot of that, like the principles of thermal mass, and it's really neat. It's never going to be a homestead. It's only an acre, but there will be a fair amount of guerrilla gardening because it's surrounded by hundreds of acres of state-owned land. And
oh, fuck yeah. Just plant on their shit. Just call it the food forest. There you go.
The way I see it, if it's state-owned, that means it's mine, right?
It's yours now. Yeah, just go over there and start homesteading it, you know?
That's the plan.
Well, fuck yeah.
Living the dream.
And you can do a lot with fucking 1 acre, I'll tell you what. But if you had to.
If I had to.
Yeah. So, hey, well, so we can talk about whatever, but the idea I had was that we can kind of talk about some cool shit that happened this year that, you know, you guys have been into, and then like things you look forward to for the next year. So, Gonzo, you kind of already did that. You guys bought yourself a cool ass house. You'll be doing that. Rayo, what do you got? You know, what were you up to this year, and what do you got going on this coming year?
Yeah. So I guess really my mind right now is pretty much wholly on. I mentioned, you know, focusing on more indoor stuff, digital stuff, and we've been really busy with Paznia, doing what we call Paznia Sacralum Assemblies, and I guess we could call them our meetings of our Department of Technology. And basically, you know, there's lots of different topics, but we've been really focused on, I guess, just as an example, last night we had another meeting, and we were talking about Jitsi, which is a really great self-hosted, encrypted, you know, peer-to-peer chat platform, very much like a replacement. I see as a potential replacement to Zoom, like, I guess, our overall vision for it. But yeah, basically, just like, you know, we're building, you know, all human institutions. I mean, one of those things, if we're going to communicate digitally, we have to own our technology. Has to be open source, has to be auditable, has to be vetted. It can't be spying on us. It can't be working against us. So, you know, centralized, you know, trusted third parties are not good unless they're, you know, part of our trusted vetted network. So we've been doing a lot, I guess, in the realm of self-hosting. I've been looking into just within the past week, got to start testing on it's called Nextcloud, and there's integrations for OpenStreetMaps, there's integrations for Jitsi, OpenOffice. So like if you think about it, it's basically like our own, it'd be like a Paznia cloud network, I guess you could say. We could have collaboration on OpenOffice, you know, our own, you know, Jitsi, you know, our own like Jitsi chats, much like what we're doing now. OpenStreetMaps for which I've been promising, I've been working on it very slowly and getting submissions, but one of the features of Paznia Network is our Paznia map and directory, which basically shows somewhat close, you know, security culture principles in mind. We aren't going to dox ourselves, we're not going to ask you to, but we want to have, you know, a visual, you know, map put together for people to, you know what's available. And yeah, that integration is available on Nextcloud. So there's going to be a lot of research and development in the next, even within the next month, but especially over the next few months to get those out. Because, you know, while it is digital, I mean, these are digital tools that will very much, you know, help us to facilitate things in physical space and time. So yeah, I guess that's digitally. Otherwise, homestead stuff, we just got, I've been holding off on expanding the ruminant pen, or I guess the ruminant pasture. And doing a lot of stuff there because we're going to hopefully be building a house in the next few years. And we actually just got a pond built on the property. So now I know where the pond's going to be. Got big ideas for, you know, for raising a lot of really good pastured lamb and goats. So that's really kind of the big thing. And I want to expand the chicken and the turkey pen, get them some more, you know, room to free range and such. But yeah, I guess that's pretty much what's on my mind right now. Looking forward to you know, more progress in the digital realm, so we can do a lot more cool things in physical space and time.
Yeah, is the pond done? It's mm-hmm. totally done.
The pond's done. And really we're just waiting for it to fill up now. Right. Which could take a little bit, but yeah, it's you know, nice big ponds, deep enough in the center for geothermal, and we get the house put in. So we'll have off-grid heating and air basically, you know, from the start. We've got, I guess, I don't know what they're called, but they're, you know, metal tunnels that go down to the very bottom of the pond where we can pump out, we can drop a pump down in there and never have to worry about, you know, water hoses freezing hoses freezing or anything over the winter. And they'd be fed with pond water. And we could do the same down the road. We have a well, which we're probably going to use the well. But my parents pull their house water out of the pond. And they do geothermal. They kind of test out the geothermal first, too. But, yeah, it'll be really nice. I'm excited for it to fill up in, you know, a year or two. And, yeah, it'll add a lot more self-sufficiency. And it looks really good. And it's a really good step forward. So, yeah.
Awesome. Right on. So you're focusing, you're going to expand the herd this year or what?
Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely expand it, but I want to, you know, one of the things, you know, trying to actually, you know, bring in some income on the homestead. So I want to raise, I raise all our lambs on organic grains when they do get fed grains, which is a few, 3 or 4 days a week. And then they, yeah, just get pasture. So, the guy that I got my initial batch of lambs from, he takes a big herd of them to the auction, and you don't get as much, but you drop them off live. You don't have to process them. So I want to raise like an initial herd of like 12 and not really feed them that great. Cause I mean, they don't pay any more if you feed them good. So why would I do that? But yeah, I guess that's, I'll kind of, yeah, expand for, you know, personal and for, you know, hopefully, some for auction too, but yeah, it's kind of the,
yeah, cool. Offset your cost. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. All right. You got anything else?
Not really. No, I guess I'll mention, it's another year. We had another year of gatherings here at Veritas Pasnia. So we have, you know, 5 or 6 gatherings in the second realm a year, official ones. And then people are welcome, to come out, you know, van nomads stop through here when they're traveling. People, you know, come out and visit, whenever. Got a lot of land. So, always love to have people visit. But, I just lost my train of thought, but gatherings. Yeah. Let's talk about gatherings. You know, like, you know, the network's always getting stronger. You know, there's a lot of, you know, just personal, you know, bonds and relationships that are getting stronger. I'll mention, so like, yeah, we've had our gatherings here, but, you know, Sec, you had your thing at your place, and, you know, it was another, you know, another incredible time. Met Gonzo there, got to meet Penguin. So a lot of folks in the digital, you know, digital realm that I really, you know, I've had a chance to meet them, and you know, it's great. So these digital relationships are becoming real, and you know, solid relationships are being formed and developed. So that's obviously the most critical part of you know, a vetted or parallel network or something like that is you know, that's the solid relationships and trust and all that. So yeah, it's important. It's amazing to see. So I guess that's really all I have.
Right on. BJ,
you've been traveling a lot this year, but what else you've been doing this year? What are you doing next year? That kind of stuff.
Well, I guess just the usual. I mean, nothing too exciting. I didn't get a garden done this year just because late last winter was a nightmare and inherited some things that my small apartment couldn't hold, which got in the way of my sort of corner of the apartment that I dedicated towards seedlings and things like that. So it's just, I wasn't able to shuffle everything around, but I do plan on starting up seeds again, probably in March at the earliest, because as you guys know, our zone 4 is a very short growing season. So our last, you know, quote unquote, danger of frost day would be like May 9th, between the 9th and the 11th. Usually if it's warm enough, I'll go with like the 6th or the 7th. So I'm going to just do the same thing as I've always done, which is like a salsa garden. You could call it that. Basically, since I'm carnivore, and I'll grow whatever else any my local anarchist folks and friends that I network with, and any of those guys want to grow something, I'm willing to grow that too for them. A lot of the folks that I network with are apartment dwellers or don't have the kind of space that they would like to have if they wanted to do, say, containers or something. And of course, you know, being in zone 4 makes gardening a little difficult for just about everybody, whether or not you live in an apartment. I've got a friend in Wisconsin who did a greenhouse project this past year, and they're almost finished with it, and they're already got hothouse stuff in there, like tomatoes and citrus even. And so that's something that's really cool to share, I guess. It's not me, but it's, you know, it's a friend. So I guess when it comes to, you know, doing my GFY stuff, you know, GYF stuff, go fuck yourself, grow your own food, whatever. I'm a little behind, but I'm excited for spring. We'll see what happens. And not a whole lot else going on, except we started doing a regular monthly agora outside at one of our members' businesses. They own a shop that does muffler repairs and stuff, and so we've been able to have, you know, our little tents up, and got my buddy that's a DJ comes out, and then somebody else comes out with their stuff that they've made, and we invite people to come, you know, sell things that they've made or demonstrate things, get people to sign up for our little group. So I'm just concentrating on growing my little group and just working. And, you know, I don't have a lot of exciting things to report, really. Just, you know, I'm still a noob with a lot of this stuff. And so, you know, we're just trucking along. But business is okay. And life is like pretty good, everything considered. So, yep.
Life is good. Where did you, if you don't want mind sharing, where did you travel in Europe? You were fucking everywhere, and every day it seemed like you were somewhere else. Where did you travel? How was that?
Yeah. So, I landed in London, went out to Chicago because there wasn't any direct flights from Minneapolis that I wanted. I think I told you guys, I think it was August or something, that I was listening to some folks talking about, they were reading some Lou Rockwell stuff, which I'm not, you know, a big fan of him, but some of the stuff that comes across my desk is sometimes interesting. And there was this big article that a lot of Americans didn't know about, was the EU and the European Union. You know, as you guys know, a few years back, maybe almost starting with like 10 years ago, they were much more open to, you know, migration and stuff. They had a lot of open border policy things going on. Well, coming in 2024, they're going to start shutting all that shit down. And if you're not a citizen, you have to now have a visa, which I've looked at some of the stuff that they're asking people, and I can send you guys a link if you're interested in perusing it. It's very, very much a workup of all your private business. You have to tell people, like, even if you're just going to Europe for a weekend, anything, visit under 90 days, you have to have a complete like background check and all this other shit. And, you know, I wasn't super interested in visiting really early, but I've always had it on my bucket list, just, you know, because I'm, I'm a fucking white person. And so there's a lot of my heritage is over there, you know, it's, and so I was like, I'm just going to go before this 2024 thing hits. I just get it over with. I just bumped it to the top of my bucket list. So I went to London for 5 days, and had a lot of sightseeing there. As a Christian, I was very interested in seeing, you know, a lot of the Anglican churches and a lot of the historic stuff over there. And then I went from London to Paris via the tunnel. I mean, the English Channel, I should say, which takes you over. You can either take a tunnel train or you can take the ferry. So when I say tunnel, I meant to say channel. But so I took the ferry over to Paris. I'm not a fan of Paris, but it's really the easiest way to get onto the continent from London is to go by Paris. So I was there for a couple of days. I hated it. It smelled like pee. Everybody's mean. What else? It wasn't like on my bucket list. It was just like a stopover. So, and then I went from Paris to Brussels, which was really cool because I don't know how much you guys know about Brussels, but Belgium is an interesting country. And a lot of people think, oh, you're going to go to Antwerp and you're going to, no, I didn't go to Antwerp. I went to Brussels. And then I went to this little town in there in Belgium called Ghent. It's kind of like, it's like the Belgian version of Vienna, you know, the town that's surrounded by water, built on water. Very, very cool. A lot of culture. I'd like to go there. Yeah. A lot of culture. It's one of those towns that's like, it's very popular for tourists to just walk through and be done in a day. Like you don't even have to stay longer than a day. It's interesting. I have a lot of photos to share that I haven't finished sharing. I went from Belgium to Munich. I was in Munich for 4 days and that was mostly by accident. I had some people that I wanted to visit over there and I stayed in what's called a hostel. Some of them call them party hotels because a lot of them are, most people are like under 30. And I mean, it's not hardcore. It's just a lot of individuals that travel. And the one thing that we have in common is that we're mostly single and we travel a lot. And so that was really fun. They dragged me out to a club and I was like not having it, but then they made me have fun anyway. And then I did see some sights while I was in Munich. I went to one of the cathedrals there during Mass. And then I also went to the plaza where they have the Glockenspiel and the little historical crap. And then from Belgium, I went to, from Munich, I went to Rome, which is a little bit of a nightmare because that's where I had my accident. I had to be seen at an ER that's for orthopedic. So like they have different ERs for different reasons. So like if you hurt a bone or something, you go to the orthopedic ER. If you hurt your, I don't know, there's different. And anyway, so they treat people and they'll see people and they don't charge you. And thank goodness my friends in Spain actually work in international medicine, insurance and networking. And so they like sent me there. They're like, here's the directions, blah, blah, blah. So I got a fracture. It's minor. Everything's great. I don't need surgery. I went from Rome to a town called Orvieto, which is a hill town that overlooks all these beautiful like farmlands and all this stuff. Everybody over there makes their own food. There's hardly any kind of grocery stores. And the stores they do have are open air markets. You know, one little guy running a shop that's like the size of your closet. And everybody there is having a great day. And there's this giant cathedral that takes over the whole square. And it's gorgeous. I went in there. It was off hours for Mass. So it wasn't like I went in there for church. But I did get to view the inside. It was really amazing. And if you guys like Michelangelo or any of that stuff, these frescoes inside this Italian cathedral were done by his master, like the person he looked up to was Signorelli. And it's just one of those things where you go to these places and you're just overwhelmed by the history of it all. And from Italy, I went to Spain and I spent 10 days there. I was in Barcelona and then I had friends in Madrid that hosted me and were very lovely gentlemen and refused to let me pay for anything, even though I tried to argue with them. took in a lot of culture. We went on a lot of little day trips, went to Toledo. And then I went back up to London for one more night and just relax and walk around some more. And from London back to Chicago and home. And in a month, I was in like 12 cities. I mean, I don't really count Stockholm and Copenhagen, but that's part of the 12 because those were just layovers. But it was an adventure. I got on my rut. I got to see a lot of really cool stuff, but I also had something stupid happen almost every day and I got homesick almost immediately. So now that I've had some time and gained some perspective, some distance, I appreciate almost every place that I was at. So I can't complain.
What is if you don't mind me asking, what did that run you? Like if I wanted to take my family of four to do that, what are we talking about?
Well, first of all, no, for me, I did the really shoestring method, which was, basically my round trip ticket from London, not including Chicago, but from London and back, that was $790 and I forget the tax. All my hotels were like mostly apartments that I would rent where it's like, somebody didn't live there. They just ran it as a property. So kind of like an Airbnb type thing, but it's just a different company. Mm-hmm. So I would say for transportation alone was about $1,500, including the round trip ticket, probably $1,600. And this is for one person. And also you have to plan some of these train trips and stuff ahead of time, because if you want to, let's say, I'm going to go to the next city over or the next country over and you have like a day's notice, you're going to be paying like a lot more. Mm-hmm. It just depends. There's some regional trains and some regional planes that are always the same price. So like there's budget airlines over there and budget train lines over there. I would say transportation alone, $1,600 for one person. My meals and things like that, I would say I probably spent.
Hey y'all, it's Resonance. From the Let's Make Some Shit podcast, here telling you guys about some of the new stuff I've got at Appalachian Apothecary. Right now I have a remineralizing tooth powder that's made with calcium carbonate and bentonite clay. I have a 4-ounce jar that I'm selling for $10 a piece. And then, also I've done a couple of body butters. They're whipped tallow body butters. One's infused with arnica and the other one is a very potent pain reliever. And if you'd like more info on that, you can find me at radical_resonance on Telegram or at Mother of Chaos, XAOS on Twitter. I'd be happy to make tinctures for you regarding like any medical condition that you have. So please reach out to me and let's see if we can get you some herbal remedies.
I probably spend about €30 a week. And that's because most of the places I would go to, I made sure that there was a supermarket in that neighborhood or a few blocks away or half a mile away. And I would go to the stores and I would shop like I was local, go back to my place and I would cook. Every place I stayed, except for two hotels, were like a full house, like a person's house. And so I was able to do laundry and cook. So you're thinking $30 to $40 a week for food. I didn't dine out much. When I did, it was like, I'm at a train station. I'm stuck here for 5 hours. And I go to like a little deli or I go to McDonald's and I get quarter pounders and throw the buns away. And that's, and if you think inflation here is bad, I paid almost $12 for a double Whopper. And I didn't even eat all the stuff that comes with it. I just pull the meat out of the wrapper and I like throw everything else away and I hold the wrapper with the meat in it and eat it. And it tastes exactly like it tastes here. And so I know I'm just getting meat. So I guess $30, $40 a week on food. And then I didn't buy a lot of other stuff like souvenirs. I think I spent like $80 on souvenirs. I accidentally did have to also add $500 to my transportation budget. I had to dig into my credit card, emergency credit card, because I screwed something up when I hurt myself. I missed two connections. One train ride was almost €200 and the connecting train ride was €117. Now in USD, that's over $300 some. So, and then staying at another different place, because I was in the wrong town. So I had to stay. I had to have another emergency, like staying at another place, like overnight. But I would say if you're taking four people with, if you have four people total and you're not trying to do a budget where I basically had 3 days worth of clothes and all kinds of personal things. And I would put it, I had it in a 38 liter backpack. And then I used like a, one of those portable wheelie things where you strap the backpack to it and you can wheel it around if you're like in a station or an airport. And then you can tuck that back in your backpack and then wear the backpack when you're walking on cobblestone or upstairs or things like that. I mean, I was literally backpacking. This was not a luxury trip. My laptop was with me. My mouse was with me. I got cables and chargers and all kinds of stuff that fit Euro plugs and UK plugs. So I did spend a pretty penny on equipment. And so I would say that was a couple hundred for my backpack, for my tech, that kind of stuff. And then I guess my incidentals, I would say about 100, because when I had my injury, I had to go to pharmacies. I had to get tape. I had to get ibuprofen, things like that, because I ran out. So you're looking at, I would say, 3,500 minimum.
I was going to say three or four grand. Yeah.
For one person.
Right.
For the travel, the food, the gear, and the incidentals. So I believe my Amazon and my cold receipts is about 200 and something for my backpack and my suitcase and all those kinds of things. But was it worth it? Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, there's only two places I stayed that weren't like a house. So I was able to wash my clothes in those places. And, you know, I just lived like a local everywhere I went. It saved hundreds of dollars. And I wasn't trying to dine out because, frankly, I can cook better than most restaurants. I don't care if they're 5-star Michelin or whatever the fuck, you know. And I have a very strict diet, so.
Right, right. Cool. So, yeah, I'm looking at like, yeah, like 16 grand to take the family to go
there. At least. Well, and that's just
like bare minimum. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you're looking at shoestring, you're looking at, you know, 10 grand at least. But
yeah, it's harder to do shoestring with kiddos.
Yeah, and if you have your spouse with you, you're talking about making decisions together. And when you're by yourself, you're like, fuck it, I'm staying here and nobody's here to argue with me. I'm going to go eat this. Nobody's going to argue with me. I'm going to go to this particular sightseeing thing today instead of tomorrow. And you can stand by your own decisions. But when you have a group, everybody has to agree on what we're going to do today. And it can make things more expensive. And also, you're going to want to stay in a nice hotel that takes care of every need. Because at the end of the day, you're going to be like, fuck, and I'm so exhausted. And it is exhausting. And you're going to be walking around everywhere. Like, I think I spent an average of 5 hours just on my feet walking around cities every day, almost every day. And at night, wherever I was staying, plug in the laptop and get more work done because my customers are 7 hours behind me, so I'm able to meet their needs, but it's at night. So anyway, it was interesting. Thanks.
Yeah, it sounds cool. Sounds cool. Very cool. Well, I'm glad you're back and fucking your hand's not completely fucked. So that's good.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Penguin, what about you, man? What are you stoked about this coming year? What did you do this year?
Yeah, I'm, you know, kind of getting into the groove where it's starting to normalize, you know, just small business lifestyle and business itself. So it's kind of like it's working. It's something that I'm committed to in the long term, and it's just kind of seeing, where it takes me, where the market takes me, and sometimes some of that development is kind of spontaneous and reacting to like what's going on with the market, with the economy, what's services and stuff are in demand. And I mean, I've seen a shift from kind of what things the circumstances might have suggested when I started running my business versus kind of what we've gotten to now. I couldn't have predicted what people were, you know, but essentially the customers are willing pay for and what people are asking for. But definitely trying to just kind of increase my skill sets, my organization, a little bit of self-discipline. Just trying to kind of become a better for the future, for expansion, trying to become a better administrator and, you know, admin, a secretary, all that stuff, keeping better records, getting bookkeeping and everything. Now that I'm not just kind of completely overwhelmed physically and mentally by the bare minimum day-to-day operations of the business, instead of just kind of clicking back and resting on my laurels, I really need to stop flying by the seat of my pants and kind of doing things as if, you know, this is kind of a small enterprise that I can kind of just wing it and not, you know, keep great records and not really be not have everything completely you know, archive, not be running a company phone, even though we have one. So I'm kind of looking forward to getting that on the ground, so that when we are expanding to, you know, size and scope to the point where I would need to actually do these things, they're already in place because we're doing things the right way and everything. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. Definitely trying to expand, definitely getting to the point where really cool decisions will have to be made, even if they're really difficult, even if there's, you know, the necessary risk and entrepreneurship involved, and, you know, further, you know, and it can be rough because I'm, you know, getting a little bit up there in years, to kind of a further deferral of, you know, taking profits or whatever, and, you know, kind of investing that back in the business. But within this scope of what I'm able to do, I'm looking forward to getting what the real plan is in running a small business on the road. So that's where I've been, and that's where I'm going to continue to go. But things are looking good, and you know, you know, of course, we have a election year coming up, and a particularly strange election year. And I mean, they're all strange. There's only so many of them, and they all have their unique circumstances. But, you know, I hope, you know, whatever happens, I hope it doesn't cause the economy to totally shit the bed in any kind of way that would hurt me. Other than that, I mean, I don't think anything is particularly damaging as far as my lifestyle. I mean, you never know, knock on wood, but hopefully society doesn't totally collapse in the next couple of years, so I can get some resources together and have a little bit of spare time to kind of do the things that I want to do in life that maybe I've been in a position where I've had to defer, and, you know, kind of get some resources and savings and some prepping done and planning out of the way. Not the inevitable, but in the possibility that they do in some way decline. But overall, pretty positive outlook for, I don't know, the area that I live and everything. You know, I feel like I live in a place where a lot of, I mean, this is going to sound kind of silly, but I live in a place where a lot of goofiness doesn't occur. It's a very centrist place. I live in a place where it doesn't seem like we're going to make the national news for any particular reason, or especially any particular, like, ideologically linked reason. Like, nothing will happen here. Nothing seems to happen here that's localized as far as, like, national news stories. And you could potentially live here. I mean, it's very, like I said, it's very involved. A lot of people employed by federal government, federal contractors and stuff like that. So, I mean, it has that kind of downside, but it actually creates, kind of a heterogeneous, I don't know, in some ways it's homogenous, in some ways it's heterogeneous mix, but it creates a place where I live where it's like the national news controversies that are really quite stupid and pointless, and doesn't actually necessarily is indicative of where real world events are actually going, you know what I mean? But a lot of things don't happen. I've said this before on the podcast, I've never seen any of the weird stuff on the news, whether it's, you know, riots or looting or you know, communists or Nazis in the streets or anything like that. Never in my life pretty much ever seen that. So, you know, knock on wood, things are looking up. And I've, you know, I'm still just a big, obviously, you know, pro free market, pro free enterprise guy. And, you know, I see nothing wrong with the, you know, my lifestyle, my commercial lifestyle, and my business, it's kind of, it's all one unified thing, you know, where we exist to do business, trade, and serve others, and all in the same go. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the challenges of the new year, and hopefully this will be kind of one that is, you know, a little pivotable, a little bit transformative to bigger and better things.
Good deal. Good luck to you, man. I know you're just getting over that first couple of year hump, and then after that, it's just going to be the problem of too much work. Yeah, yeah, yeah. After that, it's the problem of having too much work.
Can't wait.
That's awesome, because I know when we talked to you about in the last couple of years, it seemed like you sound like way more chipper about it and positive about the future. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's all, I mean, it is what Sex said. It's literally all about customer base. Like, all the work that I've done is just creating a customer base, reputation, just a customer base of people that I can just make a bare minimum living, just kind of coasting, so that anything more that I do or anything more that comes along, and it's a lot easier when it comes along on its own accord. If that means, I'm a religious guy, God will provide, but like, it's a lot less cost when you're not paying to market your business, when you're 100%. Not seeking opportunities wherever they are, even if they're 20, 25 miles away, or even less. It's a lot of driving, a lot of time for kind of low margin business, you know, that I do, essentially low margin business in many cases. Or if it's like a regular service calls kind of deal, it's really tough. So really trying to get this business down to a very streamlined, very limited geographic region. Gas and driving time will absolutely kill you in a route-based business.
Absolutely. And, you know, even, I mean, I'm not a landscaper, so I can't have any expertise, but in any business, you know, the marketing is literally 3/4 of the battle. And once you've got word of mouth and you've got your networking and all that stuff sounds like it's in place. And so, like you said, you're able to just serve the people that already know about you, and that's it. That really does make it easier.
Hey, y'all, I got something cool to tell you about. So you know how I'm doing a big initiative to try to get more people to Gorilla Garden? Well, Daggerist over at agoristacres.com, he's kind of teaming up with me a little bit here to help support this cause. So if you use the code Agora10 over at agoristacres.com, you'll get 10% off. For any reason, you're buying seeds, whether that be guerrilla gardening or your own garden, anything like that. But if you contact Daggerist or myself and you tell them that I sent you to get seeds for guerrilla gardening, he might be able to swing an additional hookup. It might be just whatever he's got, you know, a surplus of or that kind of thing, whatever he can do. So he's down for the cause here and really wants to help see this come to fruition. So I am Sekmagora at Sekmagora on all the social media. You can contact Daggerist directly on his website, agoristacres.com again. And the code is Agora10 to just get 10% off straight up. And tell him I sent you for guerrilla gardening, and he'll try to hook you up however he can. And this is what we got to do. We got to support people that support us that want to see more of this in the world. So again, it's agoristacres.com. Check it out and get out there and cause a ruckus and get some guerrilla gardening done. All right, y'all, peace.
Let me ask Ray a question
since he's got to leave. Oh, sorry, man. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I'm going to ask this to everybody.
No, go ahead.
I'm going to give Rayo a chance to answer this before he's got to scoot. What do you think about the state of the world? And are you optimistic, pessimistic, nervous? You know, what do you think about the future of humans?
I guess it's a big question, but I don't know. I mean, I look back at Rayo's writings in the '60s, and then, you know, another person instrumental in my path was Bill Cooper. And I mean, a lot of this stuff, like the Serval Society, has existed. You know, like the, I guess we're seeing, I mean, there may be, you know, bigger and smaller events, but there's nothing really out of the ordinary. The behavior of the Serval Society, things are progressing as you would kind of expect it to, if you, you know, look back into history at all. So, I mean, as far as like overall, I mean, yeah, there's certainly the past few years, things are becoming more apparent, and those few folks who can be shaken awake, or, they could be, you know, a great part of the, you know, of, you know, you know, second realm, a great part of the Pasadena network. So like, I guess as far as like large scale, not really super optimistic, but, I mean, I do see, I definitely do see, you know, some positives, you know, on individual levels with some people. So, I think that's really the most optimistic. And then, you know, I mentioned some of the stuff that's happening with, you know, the second realm with the Pasadena network. And, you know, regardless of what's happening in the Serval Society, you know, we can build, and we can, we can build digitally, and we can get together in physical space and time and do a lot of really amazing stuff, regardless of what's transpiring. Yeah, I guess that's pretty much the long and short of it from my perspective. Not a super long answer, but yeah, it's probably not going to change much year by year. It really is. I mean, we're gonna see. I mean, I kind of thought, like, especially with the lack of, I guess, with a lot of the stuff that was happening in physical space and time on the homestead, I didn't get a lot of the stuff done in the digital realm that I wanted to. But a lot of that focus is starting to happen now. And yeah, I have a big vision I've talked about on some podcasts, but it's hard to put into words, hard to fully illustrate. So I just recommend for anyone that's interested, just check out the Vani podcast, and check out our assembly. I just released the Pasadena Second Assembly from last night. We talked about Jitsi, and then funding for Department of Technology projects and Second Realm projects in general. So yeah, it's keeping a focus, attention, and funneling finances from the First Realm to the Second Realm. It's, you know, all of those very important things. You know, putting them on building the new, and not so much on what's transpiring in the old, because that's, you know, the same old story. That really hasn't changed, but we can build something new. So that's kind of what my focus is.
Yeah, we can exist in the cracks, as they say.
Mm-hmm. We can hide, but still exist and thrive. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, I think that's the best course moving forward for sure. Do you got a scoot, or are you gonna stick around for a bit?
I'll stick around for a bit. Yeah, at least another, you know, at least half hour or so. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Oh yeah, we probably won't go much longer than that anyway. All right. So I'll be last. This year we had our gathering, which is our second annual gathering. Most of you in this room were there, except BJ, she bailed. Punk.
I didn't bail.
Yeah, you've gotta make it something, BJ.
My passport wasn't here yet, and I wasn't trying to get a U.S. one and an international one. And
I'm just giving you shit.
I wanted to be there so bad.
Mm-hmm. But
yes, maybe so in a few years we'll have a national AgoraCon.
What's that? What'd you say?
He said AgoraCon.
Maybe in a few years we'll have a national AgoraCon. BJ can,
oh, there you go.
Can, host that or something. Yeah. No. I've met everybody in this room except BJ. So, looking forward to meeting more of our associates, as you say.
Yeah. Fellow popes. Yes.
Accomplices.
Yes. It was a fucking great time, and like Gonzo said, it was nonstop bacon. Then. I mean, there was bacon on the fire all weekend long.
Rub it in, so why don't you?
Yeah. Oh, man, so much food.
It was so good.
Yeah. That fire was going all weekend, and it was just food all fucking weekend long and cooking on the fire.
Offending vegans in the tri-state area.
Yeah, probably. I don't think, do we have any vegan guests? I don't think so. No.
We're entirely too cold for all that.
But me and my other half, we got married at the fest, which was good.
By a fucking wizard, no less.
By two wizards, not just one wizard, two wizards. It was a fun time, you know, like in some sense we were already married, you know, like she's my wife. We were married in every sense, but legal, but it's good to have a ritual, you know? So we had a little ritual with, you know, our friends, and that was a good time. That made me very happy. But I've been going fucking, I'm an insane person, so I've been going pretty crazy this year. Building or maintaining the homestead that we live on now, and then also building another homestead. I'm focusing on trying to produce more of my own meat. So I've been building another homestead up the road from us, about a half hour up the road, on a couple of acres, just putting in fencing. We've got rabbits. I plan to get meat birds when I get back from vacation. Goat, sheep. Somebody was trying to talk me into pigs. I might do pigs. I don't know. But some turkey and that. And then just up until now, I've just been sort of trading for meat from people I know that produce meat. And then now I got to pull the trigger and start making it myself, or growing meat myself. And so doing that. And also we rent where we are now, which we like it here, but it's hard to justify dumping a bunch of capital into a place that you rent. So we've been looking at properties. So I'll probably be building another homestead once we find the property we want. We kind of want to buy raw land and clear it and build a house exactly how we want it. And so that's what we've been doing. And then my business exploded this year. So I've been, which is good. I'm making, you know, decent money in that, and business is good, but I've been fucking working nonstop all this year, and I'll be doing that all this winter and probably all next year too. But that's just what I do. Turning 40 here in a month or two. Wait, month. Yeah, month. Less than a month. Yeah. Yeah, BJ says, take it super easy on your vacay time off. No, we're going on a road trip. So I'll be driving. You know how it is. It's like you need a vacation after you get back from your vacation. Yeah, no, we'll be driving. We're taking a road trip. We're going to see friends along the way, on the way up north, and then see some of my family for the holiday. And then
you're like a punk Clark Griswold.
Kinda, yeah. Yeah, we're doing Christmas vacation road trip. So
awesome.
I'm going to wear my ass out, and then I'll probably take a day off once I get back to do nothing. And then it's fucking go time. And so yeah, that's our move recently is, I mean, we already make our own produce, our own pickles, our own medicine, our own soap. I don't. My lovely wife does. I'm the raw labor, you know? So I just help produce it, the ingredients for these things. And then she's the wizard who turns my kitchen into a chemistry lab. But so we've got all that kind of stuff down, you know, we produce all that. It's we just need to make the move to start producing more of our own proteins and stuff. I mean, we already have chickens for eggs and that, but I'm going to go a bit harder with that. We're going to get like 30 layers and then just start selling eggs. And much for the same reason, like Rayo mentioned before, about just getting more goats to sell them at auction or whatever. It's, I don't care so much about making like a profit, but if I can get it to pay for itself, that's fucking awesome. If I get food, you know, if I make enough at farmers markets and stuff, to pay for the infrastructure cost and food and whatever, and I get all the free food, that's enough. Yeah. Breaking even, like PJ, mm-hmm. right here. Yeah. As long as it's a wash, at least I'm a happy man. It just takes some work doing it. I mean, I'll take making money too, but, you know, I want it to at least pay for itself. And I started selling firewood too. So now I got piles of logs to cut through and split and sell and deliver and all that shit. Cause you know, apparently I just hate my own body or something. So I just keep just fucking, man, it's,
you're just diversifying. Like you just diversified like tenfold. That was amazing.
Yes. Yeah. No,
that was a big year for you. This was a big year for you, man. For sure. For real.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've been doing a lot. I've been working at least 6 days a week every week, if not seven, all year. Between my business here and shout out to my wife because she takes care of a lot of the stuff around here because I'm either at work or working at our other homestead. But yeah, I've been either working at the business around here. Doing, you know, basic stuff and, you know, harvesting and all that and clearing, you know, logging basically at our other property up the road or putting in fencing or whatever the thing. So, so far all we got is rabbits, but I will be getting some meat birds when I get back from, it was no sense getting them now before we go away for 2 weeks. So I'm going to wait till I get back and then get, I don't know, 10, 15 meat birds and then start with that. Cause I have the tendency to like, when I do something, I'll just go fucking way too big with it every single time. Cause that's just how I do it. So I'm
yep.
So I was like, I know I'm going to build enough tractors to get fucking 30 to 50 meat birds. And now I'm like,
I want 100 ducks.
Right. Yeah, nope. Seriously.
Nope.
Because I'm like, well, I can take that surplus and I can do this and I can do that and I can buy all the feed in bulk and blah, 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 blah. And it'll be cheaper. And I'm like, no, just start with fucking 10. I'm going to start with 10 because that's probably enough chicken for us for a while. You know what I mean? Start with 10, butcher those, get your fucking, you know, get used to that before you get 50 of them. You know what I mean? So, we're going to start with like 10 or 15 of them and maybe a couple of turkey and then go from there. Cause I've already got the chicken tractors built for that amount. So I don't have to build any more tractors right now. I can just, get 10 or, you know, 10 meat birds or so and just start with them, butcher them. And then right before they're ready to butcher, I can get like 10 more and then they're in the brooder box and then I butcher them and then they go in the tractor and it's a cycle and I'll start with that. You know, and then get build up a little bit of a customer base around here to sell our surplus chicken and make sure our freezers are full and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, no, it's been a busy year and it's going to be, bro, if we find a piece of property that's like raw land, like I'm talking woods, it's about to get even harder next year because I'll be doing this, the other one, you know, while we're still living here, I'll be taking care of this place, the other place up the road, and I'll be logging the new place so I can clear enough of a place for us to pull. Cause what our plan would be is, well, this is what we're thinking about is you get a, you know, a piece of raw land that's woods. And if it's woods, I can take those logs and turn that into money and that can pay for putting in the well or the septic tank and all that kind of stuff. So I log enough to where we got a building plot basically. And then we can pull in an RV or a trailer or something and get the well dug and the septic and all that kind of stuff. And then once we're there, I can clear more and start logging that or whatever I don't log, I can sell as firewood or whatever, what have you. And then we build our fucking house and then I log some more. And so imagine what I'm doing now plus that.
So, I mean,
and I'm going on 40.
Just clearing the land for your property is going to bring you a lot to start with. And then you've got deadfall in the back parts of it. You know, that's good too for firewood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It took me, I think a couple of months to clear about an acre at our other property up the road.
Yeah,
and that's just doing it on like Saturdays and Sundays and stuff.
Yeah, and that was just when you had time, not full time.
Right, not full time. So yeah. And if we're
please don't die this coming year, okay?
I can't die. I've got a little daughter. I refuse to die.
All right.
I got to make it till at least she's grown. So, no, I can't. You can't kill me. So. I recognize. Okay, so this is how I am now.
You're pickled. That's why you won't die. You're
pretty much
pickled.
Yeah. I was like twice as bad as in my 20s. Like an insane person with doing stuff. I have to be doing stuff all the time. So I've actually like chilled out. This is me like doing much less than I ever have in my entire life. So like I actually will take a few hours or whatever and just do nothing and play with the kids. Whereas like when I was in my 20s, it was just fucking dark till dark every single day. So no, but I have a problem and I realize that. So I have to like force myself to rest sometimes, but my body is not what it used to be. But I can still, I mean, I say that, but I've got 20-year-olds working for me and they can't keep up with me. So there's that.
Well, I mean, the state of 20-year-olds these days is pretty pathetic. So, I mean,
They're that's one different. Thing I will say. I'm a business owner and I got a couple of people working for me, but I'm not one of those business owners that like just has a clipboard and points. Like I will literally outwork anybody that works for me, you know, like, so I don't ever, in some sense they respect me for that. So I don't know.
This generation is just like Dorito inhaling recliners that game all day long.
Yeah.
Present company excluded if you're like 30 or something, you know.
I'm 39, so maybe I am that generation. I don't know. But so that's what, that's what we've been up 36. To. And that's what youngins, bunch of youngins.
We're babies. The way I feel about the work thing is that, I mean, you know, anybody with half a brain and half a sense, doesn't have any other kind of things, a record or something, they're trying to get a job tapping on computers, and I think that's I think in the long term prospects that's on its way out, and so that's a lot. A lot of these tasks, especially on the lower end, which a lot of these people are. I mean, you know, work for home, playing on computers, extends
down.
You're a creative, and you create in a sense in a digital space. And really, though, there are many tiers of that, also in terms of salary, but also in terms of like, you know, ability, the human influence, the ability to be automated.
If you're learning to code, that's one thing. But if you're just tapping on buttons for being programmed to do something, that's one thing. But if you're coding and actually developing things that are valuable, then yeah, it's a different thing.
Yes, of course, and especially if you're running a process from start to finish, a project from start to finish, basically. But anyways, like there are things that need to be done that are not as easily automated. So that's one of my outlooks. But I suppose what I'm saying basically is that there's, there's less, hopefully, you know, I would say there's less competition in really doing what I do and doing it competently and reliably. I mean, there's a reliability, even when it comes to some low value things like cutting lawn, there's a reliability aspect. And some places have some pretty strict HOAs. So, you know, if you get in with those, they really need to get that regularity. But in the long-term prospects, I think, unless we have a major societal shift and things go into a totally bad direction for society as a whole, which at that point, like my own personal prospects is there's a lot more going on than that. I think that, I think there's kind of a path forward for things that do involve human creativity and ingenuity, even when they're not seen as, you know, they're seen as fairly low skill, at least on the outset, like a low skill kind of occupation. But is it, how much ingenuity and human sort of subjectivity and what's the possibility of being automated. I think the calculus and those things changes at our level of technology, because like, you know, AI has become, it went from being a thing that's kind of in the ether, it exists on a lower level, you know, machine learning algorithm, and all of a sudden it gets released and it's free and plentiful and infinite. Like, you, I mean, it's obviously they're coming out with AI that's not related to the public. That's, you know, but like the AI that gets released to the public, they release these machine learning things, and are like generally AI, whether it's AI art generators or AI this and that. And I just see them on my Twitter timeline, so I can see kind of what they're capable of with the different prompts and so forth. But it's like, that's infinitely inexpensive. They're just free. You can just do it. And I'm sure there's more sophisticated ones you can pay for, but like that's going to change outlooks a lot, because I know what I want to get into. What a lot of people do for a living now, even entry level jobs, a lot of people do, you know, a work for home or information based economy thing. And I think some of those, a lot less than what you do, BJ, but some of that workforce is going to go away. So I feel kind of secure in my prospects and outlooks. I don't think what I do is going to go away, at least not into the immediate future. Now, you know, with the demographic trend lines and boomers, as the boomers age out of being able to kind of take care of their home maintenance, that's a good thing for me. Long-term prospects, eventually.
Absolutely.
I don't know where it's going to go down the line. Wait, what did you say?
I just said absolutely. I mean, just in terms of maintenance alone, maybe it's not creative work that you're doing, but it's maintenance, and you're good at that. And that's always going to be in demand for people that, you know, insist on having lawns and shit.
It requires a human touch. A, you can communicate with somebody a lot more easily. You know, you can communicate, we can actually have a human to human communication. And then not that I'm just doing even easily automated with tasks, but like you can have a human to human conversation. There's also infinite variations of what can be done. And you know what I mean? Like I said, the cost of automating information-based stuff is becoming so infinitesimally low, because basically, you know, it's just at the end of the day, it's just electrons, and there's no like fixed cost to a lot of those things. I don't know. I think the prospects are pretty good, and maybe we'll end up with some kind of cool agorist. We can all like homestead and make grow fish in our basements and stuff in the future. I don't know. But that's long-term prospects. Short term, I think it'll be incrementally easier to do a lot of our projects with a lot of the tech that's kind of lowers the cost of putting into, whether it's our businesses or our, you know, on the side setting endeavors.
You know what would be awesome is if ChatGPT would just draw from like fucking Konkin and shit.
Oh, okay. Yes, that's so. Yes. Oh, I mentioned Nextcloud before. There's AI integrations for Nextcloud, and Jamin has already. Jamin's on it. I've been annoyed by the AI shit too, but he's been using it. He's got a bunch of like documentation for the ghost pads and stuff. And Jamin's like the super intelligent like hardware hacker, and to communicate with like normies on like why this technology is important is not his thing. So he has like this endless documentation. And he's been basically putting it into AI to try to make it like readable for the average person. So like he's utilizing this stuff to like severely save him time. So it's I told him, I guess I got to actually look into this now. And there's a guy here at Pasnia who wants to, same thing with Konkin. He wants to have like the Rayo GPT and input. I've got everything that Rayo wrote from the 1960s to 1974 when he disappeared. And basically you input everything. Like all of that, all of the inputs, and then you can ask it a question and it'll generate an answer based off of what he wrote in those publications. So the same thing could easily be done with Konkin. It's not something I'm super interested. I'm starting to get interested in it. Regrettably, I didn't want to, but it is something that needs to be paid on, and not in like the artificial intelligence sense, just that like you're writing algorithms for computers to do the work for you using processing power. We don't have to be mystical about it. Like it's not like creating new humans or something like that, new intelligences. But yeah, anyway.
That's sweet, dude. I mean, I think I think ChatGPT has been helpful for a lot of people just to like do research or whatever, but also at the same time, it's fed all the crap you and I probably spent our lives unlearning. You know, it's a lot of propaganda, mm-hmm. a lot of stuff that's biased towards X or Y, and it's like, ugh, the fuck out of here, you know?
I, for one, welcome our Google overlords.
Okay, and yeah,
I know they're listening to me right now, and I just don't want an Amazon drone to crash into my house.
I'm trying to massage them like a good dog. Yeah,
I guess. Yeah. Skynet. All right, sorry. We should wrap this up soon, but same question to Gonzo, Penguin, and BJ. Are you optimistic about the future? What do you feel about this state of humanity? And I mean, are we all going to die in a nuclear holocaust? What's going on?
No, I'm 100% white pill. I spent the first 4 years of becoming libertarian and not knowing what the fuck I was with this giant black pill attitude. And I've had enough. You know, I wake up every day and I'm excited. So.
Well, I don't know. I have a mixture of feelings, and I think the way that I'm going to handle it is the same way that I have been for years. I guess I'm due to the new property, I'm going to be shifting out of homesteading and getting back more into a bunker mentality, trying to make this place as self-sufficient as I can, you know, making sure that I have fallback systems and I'm covered in every way possible, because, you know, there's hundreds of acres I can hunt, there are lakes and rivers I can fish, like there's that's pretty good. But I'm gonna try to diversify, kind of take all the skills that I've learned, you know, in the last couple decades, from doing hardscaping to doing, you know, building and fabricating and automation. Try to take all those skills and apply it to this property and possibly get a little bit of notoriety, maybe a little bit of money by recording that process, because there are a lot of people that would rather sit and watch shit on YouTube rather than do it. So if I'm the guy doing it and I put it on YouTube and those people want to give me money, well, I'm not going to tell them no. And I'm going to continue networking like we have been. We're going to bring back Bohemian Grove, which is where I met Sec the first time. We threw an event down in Kentucky, and Sec came up, and then he started Chilluminati, and I want to keep that momentum moving and keep meeting our tribe, you know, not just on the fucking internet, but actually in person, meeting, networking, and building that network. So while I'm optimistic for us, I would say that I'm a little pessimistic for the normies. I think shit's going to get a lot harder if you aren't awake, aware, and prepared. I do see it getting harder for them, but as for us, I think we're going to be fine.
Fuck, my mic wouldn't unmute. Yeah, I mean, in some sense, as it gets worse, it might even get better for us. You know, like, yeah. I've said this before, the worse it gets, the more it's going to push people out to the edges. And that's where we are. So the more people we have out on the edges, the more we can build things and networks ourselves, you know? And, you know, I think that's... It sucks that that's the way it has to go, but I think that overall over time, that's kind of how it's going to go, and it's going to work to our benefit, oddly enough. You know, I just hope it doesn't, you know, another plague doesn't hit or fucking nukes don't go off before then. Yeah. But yeah, no, I think I'm overall optimistic. Life is fucking good. Like, I'm doing all right. My family's good. My friends are good. You know, like, everybody I know is fucking going. So, you guys are distracting me with the chat. So
it's fucking BJ.
It's all your fault. Penguin, what about you, man? Are you like over, not just like your own stuff, but like the state of the fucking human race? Are you optimistic?
You know, mixed feelings, same way. Obviously, that's usually the case. It's mixed, but I guess where I would fall on that, you know, it depends on what you're talking about. As far as, you know, I guess this country, or maybe, you know, where I live, or the stuff that I interact with, I think things are, don't look like they're in any kind of great danger, except for, you know, the election. I mean, I'm kind of, I don't know, I'm kind of secretly hoping they, I mean, I want Trump to go as far as he can go, because I secretly do want to hope that they try to steal it from him. I didn't say that.
Yeah, we were talking about that last time you and I chatted, Penguin.
They have to. So let's see what happens. I kind of just want to see the shit hit the fan. Maybe that's probably
people
not
screaming in the street again.
Hopefully it's just that it's just enough to be entertaining, I guess. But and hopefully exactly. I'm somehow shielded from all of that, and I maybe could be it. Potentially that could actually happen. Minneapolis, or I don't know if that's, it's close to where you're from. That any kind of city like that, yeah, good luck. But yeah, I'd be shielded from it.
I'm safely buffered from all the shit that happens in Minneapolis. I'm kind of almost in the suburbs. I mean, it's
Not quite in there.
If you wanted to go visit the George Floyd Square, it's like a 40-minute drive from me, if that makes any difference to you.
Ah, well, yeah, I've never been there. I don't know what it's like. I just know it's cold. Too cold for me. I am kind of, I don't know. The responsible part of me is actually kind of happy that things are, this is the kind of duality, right? The responsible part of me is happy that things are relatively stable and prosperous in this relative world peace. I mean, I guess, I mean, I obviously, my heart is obviously just torn and rendered with the situation in Gaza and in Palestine. But you know, as far as the world absolutely going in, becoming, you know, in world conflict and death and destruction everywhere, happy that we don't have to face some sort of apocalypse, not trying to see that in my life, obviously. But you know, part of me does say, you know, like, maybe we need a little bit of a release and something where I would like to see the political cycle, you know, in this country. I mean, it's just such a toxic, bad politics that I just hate so god awfully much. But there'd be some kind of reckoning, I think, for this leadership class and this kind of, I don't know, this political impasse. It's both like a uniparty and two really stupid sides that are, I mean, we can go on and on about this, but I'd like to see just a little bit of chaos. You know, I'm not so much that edgy Twitter poster where I'm a chaos anarchist, chaos appreciator, or all that stuff, but this is one of those situations where I think maybe a little bit of chaos is called for. But that could just me being irresponsible middle-aged person, I guess.
No, I think I agree with your last point. I mean, because I think there are a lot of people who are like, you know, feel some type of way and like get mad online, but like in real life, I don't see a lot of people like ready to fling themselves off a cliff with inflation and stuff like that that's happening. Like, I think people are getting a little more subservient again, and I think it is time for a little chaos just to see. You know, I want to stand by the sidelines with some popcorn, like see people kind of wake up to shit, if that makes sense. I hate using the word wake up, you know, but There's a lot of subservience again. People are, you know, after the 3 years that we just had from hell with this public health bullshit and government bullshit, people are just kind of like easing back into being like normal again, if that makes sense. And it's like, yeah, some stuff needs to be shaken up a little bit. But at the same time, I'm positive and I'm hopeful. And one thing I wanted to report too is like in Europe, it's like people think that, you know, all the CDBC stuff, I think, is really the only vaguely real threat, I think, that we need to be worried too much about. But at the same time, everybody I talk to over there about it, who's like open-minded politically, is kind of like, it's not going to take off because people love cash. The government itself loves cash. All governments everywhere love cash. And so, you know, they can continue to their money printer and all that shit. And it's like, I just don't see it taking off. But on the other hand, it's like, okay, what can I do to prepare for it and be avoidant of it? And that's like, to me, that's the only real thing right now that's on the forefront that I see them trying to fucking do. It's already sort of happening in some places where they're like, you know, trying to get people to adopt a real ID. And there's a lot of hashtags out there with like love gov and like bank fed something. Ew. All these, if you look at some of these fucking hashtags, it's like, oh my God.
I've never seen that.
A lot of the ABC agencies. Well, the reason I know about it is because I got my mom's tax refund check in the mail last month and it had a little flyer in it with fucking, I threw it away. I was so mad at the fucking thing. Anyway, my point is, when I was in Germany, people just fucking would look at you funny if you try to use your card for stuff. And like, they just like roll their eyes and like accept your card, but they would have preferred, you know, when you're at a food truck or a small shop or something, they would just prefer cash because they have to cost them a lot of money. You know, it costs them even more over there to process stuff with a POS system than it does us. And then they have conversion rates. So because I'm, you know, American, stupid American, then it costs them even more because of my conversion rate, because I'm using a US bank card, things like that. So on one hand, I'm hopeful about this banking thing, but on the other hand, it's like, okay, what can we do, you know, to like stand up and say, fuck off, this isn't happening. I mean, I do my best. When I get paid, I get the cash right out of my bank account as much as I can. I'm saving it instead of in the bank. I'm saving it here. I'm circulating it in the local economy. You know what I mean? It's like, that's, I guess, the one thing that makes me a little nervous. But everybody that I talk to who's not a fucking statist is like, it's not going to happen.
BJ, you need to be investing heavily in the pickle schmeckle.
Yes. I was already thinking about that. I was waiting for her to finish talking.
You know what? I know that popped up and I forgot all about it. So, yeah.
I created my own currency for our own pickle economy here.
I know, but I don't know anybody locally that accepts it yet.
You it's don't only a matter of time.
No,
it's
you guys, only, you guys be forget. Careful. You guys forget that I'm in the land of the jerky economy. So,
oh, okay. Well, there's some crossover there, though. You know what I mean?
I might have to introduce my fellow anarchists locally here to your schmeckles. And I'm sorry. That sounded like a "that's what she said" moment.
Yeah.
But I agree, Penguin. I understand why it's like it's easy to be on the fence about like being positive versus fuck, what's going on? Are we going to be alive tomorrow? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good segue too. I do want to touch on like where I am kind of moved politically, and that's one of the reasons is because
in a rage.
Yeah, but this is no. But what you brought up about CBDCs and you know inflation, and, you know, implicitly the Fed and all that stuff is I want to say since we haven't been podcasting as much lately, I think this is you know we have a very similar seasonal schedules here. I you know politically, I've always been in flux ever since I started the podcast before, after, and so forth. I mean, really, my focus now is not so much on the explicitly anarchist stuff or, you know, kind of focusing on, you know, that what you said, that black pill mentality. It's not always so basically I am in enemy of the state and I'm trying to bring about chaos and everything. And I've just been taking in a lot of information, regardless of its label associations, who says what, just kind of becoming more knowledgeable and just being around discourse and being around discourse this interesting. But as far as like political stuff and political and society and kind of the more political side of things, it's society, culture, like religion and stuff like that. Very important stuff. And increasingly important. I'm going back to some of that stuff as well. But as far as actual political stuff, very much have a newfound appreciation of kind of those parts of the kind of the American right that we have some sort of connection with, as far as Ron Paul and the whole kind of anti-Fed and the fact that those things can actually be said somewhere sort of goes through in a mainstream outlet, or if he's, you know, in a mainstream outlet, if there's an election year going on or something like that. But some of that real kind of populist energy, the Fed is the problem, that there's market manipulation, inflation, something that affects literally everyone. So it's the number one populist issue. And the whole idea that this whole kind of libertarian kind of economics thing, I know a lot of people are down on economics, and a lot of people are going off what they see as bigger and more important things. But I do think it's literally, and maybe this is kind of the way I'm going to frame this, is really kind of where I'm at. I do think that it's a real social justice issue, the way that this kind of the government actually, or the state, the super state, I should say. I think I'm going to start trying to use that word super state to say the state at its largest level controls the currency and is able to, you know, control the money printer, and it also enforce the use of the currency worldwide through the military, which somehow gets into this circular effect where you have to then print the money to support the huge military, and you have to have the whole huge military to support the currency, and then it's like a just back and forth circle. But I think this destructive thing, and so in basically all of our domestic issues, and then with what I just described, all of our like international issues, so basically most of it, the vast majority of it, can be tied back to this situation. But the fact that it does actually like impoverish us, it does keep our real wages and our purchasing power down. It really does hurt us as people that are in cash economy and then are at the whim of people that can just make decisions with money. And, you know, your standard, you know, arguments about concentrated benefits for some people versus cost of the society. What's the number one way cost goes to societies when you like kill the purchasing power of every single dollar out there? And that's the thing that we have to use to buy things. And there's like, we live in capitalism, so we exchange money for things. So the fact that you can have like control of that and then actually degrade it in a certain way while enriching some people that happen to be, you know, your cronies, your people you meet with and everything. And, you know, I've definitely talked to people that falls on deaf ears, but I think there's at some point I literally do think it's a social justice issue. I mean, I don't see how it's like not the social justice issue, because it literally does not affect one identity group or one group. You know, it affects you. Affects you have a lot of money, obviously, in a certain way. It affects you if you have a little money, a little income, if you have in a certain way, and depending on how you look at it, if you. In absolute terms, or in relative terms to your income, to your savings or net worth. And it's like, it just ties, because it funds not only the actions of the government and then the government contractors and all this stuff, but it funds basically all of big corporations. Like the thing that you have to understand is this whole, like in the Fed stuff, goes on to like corporate dominance and the dominance of like multinational institutions and multinational corporations as well. And the whole idea of like, I've gotten off of this whole thing, like we should all be doing like, you know, not that we literally need to implement neighborhood technology or community technology or like neighborhood, like we need to go necessarily down to level one, destroy all corporations and loot them and steal from them and like destroy all the corporation can't exist in a libertarian society or whatever. Well, it probably can't exist because you need these money printers to keep these organizations up. So it's like it all comes back to this Fed, and it's stuff that's actually been out there. And I think that, you know, pro-market ideas in some senses are kind of down because they're kind of down on the left and the right. But I think there's a place to recapture a certain populist energy if you can frame this stuff not as like we need business people to run things, because that's not really how libertarian works. You don't get a bunch of billion dollars from billionaires, just like those two billionaires,
right? But
Yeah, it's not the ideology of billionaires. It is the ideology that could have been the ideology. I was just listening to a podcast saying, you know, they had a chance to get the Bernie Bros and the libertarians in the same room to try to remake the Fed or whatever, and they obviously, you know, kind of broke that up with what happened with Occupy, and we talked about that so many times. We don't have to go into that, but it's like I think of it this as a social justice issue, and the
product social it absolutely issue, is because whether you have money or not, it's money is an issue for everybody.
In Israel, Palestine, that's all money being printed, and all these other issues. It just never ends. So I'm really kind of just into that whole thing. And if you know, I don't need to see a total revolution remaking of society. I don't know how you're really going to reform this. I don't know the path for without some kind of great shocks that are like, you know, life changing for all of us. Like, I don't know how you reform this politically.
I think just the more people that are paying attention to stuff that's just wrong, the more people are going to stand up and say, I'm going to do this shit myself, fuck all these people. And it's trickling down. Like, people are revolutionizing themselves in their own homes. They're not out in the streets doing shit. You know what I mean? It's like people are just figuring shit out because they're getting burnt left and right by systems and everything. And speaking of, you know, libertarians and shit, it's like, okay, it's really cool that the prime minister of what is it, Argentina or whatever, he wants to deregulate all corporations as one of his first acts in the office. And it's like, okay, cool. But like in 4 years when he's ousted, then what? It's like there's still no political solutions to all the bullshit. Right. I mean, on one hand, you got your libertarians on Twitter that are like, yeah, it's like, fuck yeah, it's a big white pill, right? It's awesome, right? But it's only so much. And so, you know, I just wanted to kind of comb that into what you were just talking about, Penguin.
I'll be shocked if that dude isn't assassinated in the next year. I don't think he makes sport.
Oh, I think he loves the U.S. dollar enough that he'll be fine. But
yeah, it's a weird dynamic, actually, when you're not American and libertarian, that unfortunately the best path forward usually, which is crazy, the best path forward is like just being as pro-American, pro-dollar as possible, which is probably true because every other currency sucks so much worse than the dollar, even though we sit here in the capital of libertarianism and we hate it so much. So it really is probably, I mean, I'm just putting myself in his shoes. I mean, I'm just giving the benefit of the doubt. Like, he's a weird guy. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he's like an extreme pro-Zionist. It talks to the ghost of his dead dog. So like, you know, well, that's all there's to say about that. But there is a whole discussion to have about libertarians and Americans, but yeah, he does that apparently. So,
well, hey, I gotta go back to work.
Memes come out of it. Hopefully, some cool memes come out of it anyway. I said, hopefully, some cool memes come out of it anyway.
Yeah. Well, hey, I gotta run, but to everybody here and everybody listening, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Solstice, New Year's, whatever you guys celebrate. What? Solstice is in like 3 days. Yeah,
I said Festivus.
Oh, Festivus! Yeah. The holiday for the rest of
the year. With you people. Now it's time to air my grievances.
I celebrate not working a month.
yeah, me too.
Merry Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa.
Yeah, there you go. Does anybody want to plug something before you go?
You can follow the house at the Grateful Grotto on Twitter, Instagram, and all that shit. If you want to see the shenanigans.
Grateful Grotto?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. So yeah, I'll give that a follow.
See what I get up to.
If you're on the off chance you're listening and you're in the Twin Cities area of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and the surrounding metro, you can hit us up at tcfreedomcell.com and we welcome you to join us in a future meetings, and anything that we have happening is posted there regularly.
Awesome. Well, thanks y'all for coming and talking with us. This has been fun. And everybody be excellent to each other. Have a good rest of your weekend.
Yeah. Ciao.
Peace.
Thank you. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
You too. See you, Gonzo.
Later.